Hey friends, you're listening to the Hope and Heart Pills podcast, where we are talking all things resilience and revolution. I'm Andre.
And I'm Trishas.
And we are your hosts. And today we're joined by a very special guest. Chichi Agoram is with us. Chichi is a writer, an educator, and a facilitator. She is the author of The Enneagram for Black Liberation, host of the podcast From Armor to Ease, and associate faculty at the Narrative Enneagram. Chichi, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't we start with your book, The Enneagram for Black Liberation. When I saw the title of your book, I saw the cover on Instagram. I was like, I have to read this because everything I've read about the Enneagram has been, or had up to that point, been by white people. And I hadn't even thought about the intersection of race alone with the Enneagram, but especially not Black liberation. So where did the idea to write this book at that intersection come from, and why was it important to you?
Yeah, I was in my training program with the Narrative Enneagram years before the book, and in that training, as with most other Enneagram things I do, I was like the only or one of two or three Black folks or people of color in this space. So the narrative uses a very experiential way of teaching. So you learn through panels, you learn through people sharing their stories, which is really beautiful and impactful and all of that. But I was constantly like, how does this apply, though, to people who aren't, you know, 65, white, raised in America, financial privilege? Like, this is really beautiful work to witness, but it doesn't quite feel like it would be the same for me. And so I had some of those thoughts and questions and considerations and internally trying to make the connection for myself of like, okay, for example, one of the things was thinking about our types as like this thing we needed in the past when we were kids, when we were young adults, but now we can like let it go and lean into like the beautiful, you know, experience of existence where we don't need those survival strategies anymore. And I'm like, that's cute. That works for certain people. That doesn't work for me. So what does it look like? And then, you know, at the time too, that was kind of like the peak maybe, or somewhere along the rise of conversations around Brené Brown's like vulnerability and like how leaning into vulnerability is kind of is the invitation, and that requires us to be unarmored and all those things. And and it just wasn't, you know, the math wasn't mathing for me. So that was my internal process. And so I was having conversations with people about it. And then I was invited to do a couple speaking gigs where I talked about power and the Enneagram and a little bit about how we kind of have different work based on like our positions of power and our like racial identities. And those like talks kind of led in a, like, it's a longer story, but that kind of led to me being connected to the person who ended up being my editor. And she was like, if you were to write a book about the Enneagram from the Black perspective, what would you want to say? And I pitched what had been on my mind, and she was like, great, let's do it. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
For our listeners and for me, who did not really, it seems like a lot of people like grew up with or have had this idea of Enneagrams like as part of the culture around them. I did not have that. And I think I only heard about it like maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. Can both of you speak to what the Enneagram is and the culture it has like traditionally come from?
Yeah, that's a good point. I did not grow up with it either. I learned about it in grad school when I was studying to be a therapist. I didn't learn it in my program, but somebody else in my program introduced it to me like, hey, have you heard of this personality typing tool? So I would say the Enneagram is a system. It's a map of 9 different ways of being in the world, or 9 different ways of seeing. And the idea is that what each of us has one of those 9 ways of being as our primary way that we operate in the world. It impacts our habits, our patterns, the things that we are trying to, like our core desires, our core fears, can all be kind of explored through the lens of that one particular type. And the invitation with the Enneagram is to bring conscious awareness to what are those habitual patterns that I have used for my whole life to navigate the world, to get a sense of safety and love and belonging. What parts of that are helpful? And what parts of those habitual strategies are actually keeping me from the love, the connection, the safety that I'm actually seeking? And so I think that's like the powerful invitation of the Enneagram is like we run on autopilot. We think that we are in the driver's seat, but most of the time it's just our habitual pattern that's just running the show. And so pausing to bring awareness to who's in the driver's seat right now. Is it me? Or is it just like my automatic habits and patterns that live in my body that are telling me this person is a threat, or I'm not safe here, or I need to perform to, you know, find love? And when I bring awareness to that, then I have the option, I have the choice to say, how do I want to show up versus letting it run the show? So, and as far as cultures where it began, it dates back, it dates really, really far back. It's been around for centuries. A form of it has been around for centuries. And the history is, maybe Andre knows more about this too, but it's kind of sourced from a lot of different cultures, including a lot of cultures of communities of color across the world. And what we have today is the modernized Enneagram, which is kind of synthesized into like the system of psychology. And that version of it has been very like white centric.
Right.
Our current modern Enneagram, right? When we look back to the places and the communities where it comes from, it really borrows from traditions found in many different communities and trying to find the common wisdom in all of those to then inform this. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. The Enneagram has really been having a moment, like maybe the past 10 years or something. I feel like because before 2014, I didn't hear anybody talking about the Enneagram. I was like the only one of my friends at birthday parties being like, hey, have you heard of the Enneagram? Let me type you real quick.
Not at birthday parties.
I only heard it in like white Christian spaces.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They took that over really quickly. Like it didn't start there, but then once the Enneagram started to have its moment, it was like, as Christians and Christianity often does, it's like, how do we co-opt this now for our purposes?
Interesting.
So now
this is our thing, right? It's ours now.
Yep. And if you don't do it our way, the other way is demonic. So.
Okay. I want to go back to something that you said, though, Chi-Chi. Could you say more about why the idea of, you know, some people who are like, yeah, like this might, these survival strategies or whatever you call them might have been useful to you as a young adult, but you know, now you can unarm yourself and just enjoy the, you know, being and all that. What specifically made you say, no, like that's not an option for me?
Just the knowing that I still need my survival strategies on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Like I can't step into many spaces. There are many spaces where I don't need it, but there are also many spaces where I actually need my survival strategies in order to navigate America as a Black woman, as an immigrant, you know, like in all of these different spaces, I am not offered safety. So I have to take care of myself. I have to show up that way. And, you know, I was saying at that time, there was all these conversations around vulnerability and leaning into that and almost kind of like an undertone of like, there's something wrong or bad if you are not unarmored, right?
Oh, okay.
Like you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
It's And that's the part where I was like, no, I think this is necessary. I think my armor, I think I write about and talk about Enneagram types as armor. I'm like, I think my armor is very necessary for the world that I live in. I think my growth work and my what helps liberate me is being able to pause enough to bring conscious awareness so that I can make a choice about whether the armor is needed in this space.
Yeah.
If not, then I'm, you know, running on autopilot, right? So I never actually get to access rest and ease and peace because I'm constantly, you know, armored, ready to go, ready to protect myself. So that's, for me, I'm like, that's my work, is bringing awareness to it. So I know when the armor is up, and then I can check in and see what's reality. Do I actually need the armor in this moment, or can I set it down and have more access to, you know, other things?
I will say, like, when I was reading, I mean, a lot of our guests, I don't always have the luxury to read everybody's book, but I read your book in the emergency room. I didn't have much else to do. And I made sure that someone brought me that book in the emergency room so that I could read it.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah. I mean, Chichi, you didn't know this. This is one of the books that kind of helped me like recover from one of my mental health struggles. So I was in the, I was in the ER on a mental health hold reading the Black Enneagram for Black Liberation. And so, yeah, it really did speak to me. And that what you're talking about is something that I never heard, you know, the idea that, okay, so I'm an Enneagram type 4. And I never thought of the idea, or the way that I kind of hear it is, well, like, I can show up as that person, right? Like, now I'm aware of kind of like how I'm aware of this type structure. So now I get to choose, right? Like, I can show up as that person in this environment, and to kind of view some of those characteristics as gifts rather as things that I automatically need to put down.
Right.
Because the truth is, not everyone deserves my vulnerability. Not everybody deserves for me to show up in an unguarded way. This is who Andre is when he's with his family, close friends, alone in his apartment. Everyone doesn't deserve that, Andre. So that was a very new idea. And the other thing that I thought was so interesting about this book was your chapter about power. And connecting the Enneagram to the idea of power. And I wondered if you could comment on that. I also came across a name that was very familiar to myself in that chapter, Andre Henry. I was like, oh my God, we playing Simon Says in here. You know, and for those who've been following me for a while, you know exactly what we're talking about when I talk about Simon Says. So could you talk a bit about the Enneagram and power and kind of what you're teasing out there?
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't know you before, you know, my book came out, but I had like seen your work and like, you know, I had watched that talk that you gave, well, one of them where you used the Simon Says. So I referenced you in that chapter. And then when I saw you post about my book, I was like, oh, I wrote about you in there. but the connection for me with Enneagram and power. There was something you said, though, that I wanted to come back to. Yeah, you were, you know, just in your example of being an Enneagram 4, I just wanted to say, too, that, you know, with the Enneagram and thinking about it as armor, it's not necessarily like there's the version of you that's a 4, right? And then there's, it's like, these are characteristics that are actually natural to you, you know, like 4s are highly empathic and not afraid of the deep emotions and can be creative and have this access to seeing like a unique perspective on the world. And all those things are true to the person. It's just that when our type structures are in the driver's seat, they like tight fist around those things that are already yours and say, you only get value and you only get love and you only get acceptance if you show up as this like unique, creative, special person. And so it's kind of like, that's part of like the invitation is like, what if that's not true? What if like I get to be a lot of other things, including boring and ordinary, and I'm still loved and I'm still, you know, lovable. So I wanted to say that, but then around
power. Thank you for
power,
making that point.
Yeah. You know, I think just in the context of the Enneagram as armor and something that we use to protect ourselves, there are two things that I think are important. One is when we think of armor, we think of it as like for me. If I'm the person who's holding armor, it is here to protect me, to keep me safe. And one of the invitations in my work with the Enneagram is around considering how my armor can protect me, but also can cause harm in communities that I'm a part of, right? So the things that I do to keep myself safe or to get a sense of love or worth or belonging might consciously or unconsciously make it less safe for people around me. And so our work is not just this internal thing, but also to consider the interconnectedness of our liberation. And so another way to think of that is if I have, you know, in nine different ways, we have a singular story of who we believe we have to be okay. And that's my worldview, you know, like my story is I have to be self-sufficient and knowledgeable to be okay. Right. And part of my work, and this is true for all nine types, is how do I hold other people to that same story, subconsciously or consciously? You know, if I think everything has to be this way, my one way, the world has to be like this, in nine different ways, we all feel like things would just be so much better if you thought like me, if you showed up like me, if the things that were important to me were important to you, everything would be better. And we all do that in our nine different ways. So then the invitation is, how am I subconsciously or consciously holding the people I'm in community with to my standard of how I think the world should be? Right. And how does that limit their access to being fully themselves, you know, in whatever capacity? And so I'm tying that in with power, because people who hold access to more privilege and more power can make not just like this interpersonal way that I was describing, but you can then take that and make it institutional. You can make it like part of the rules that govern society, that this is the way things should be, right? I think of different elements, you know, different cultures, we talk about them having Enneagram types. So for example, the US culture is considered a type 3 culture, and type 3 is the performer on the Enneagram. So the core story of the 3 is the world is a place where you are only valuable based on what you do, not who you are. So in that kind of world, I have to be seen as successful and competent in order to have any value and acceptance and love. That's our society. That's also capitalism to some degree, right? But that's our society. And so all of us in this US culture are kind of steeped in that same story, that same expectation. Whether or not you're type 3, it's like, there's this, you have to perform, you have to be seen as successful, whatever that looks like, in order to have any value in this society, right? And so if you don't fit into that, there is a certain level of like punishment, whatever that looks like. Maybe the punishment is literally you don't make enough money to be okay, right? But there is some level of punishment. And those who hold more power, again, and more privilege, tend to, one, be insulated, more insulated, and also can use that power and privilege to perpetuate some of these singular stories that then become harmful to the collective.
Yeah. Given that situation, that reality, like, what do you do living under that kind of power, right? Like, because a lot of times the conversation that we're having around this is like, okay, in some ways, for lack of a better term, how to disarm ourselves or disarmor ourselves, right? And I guess this is part of your point, is that like, how am I going to disarmor myself when there's another type structure that's been institutionalized or been normalized through culture or whatever that's telling me I have to show up a certain way?
Yeah, you know, it's like, so in the chapter of my book, right, I talk about the different forms of power, right? Like power over, power. And I think my work focuses mostly, I center Black women in particular in my book, and then people who hold marginalized identities. And I think for us, it's recognizing our power within, power with the collective. And then my invitation with people who hold power over, it's like, maybe I'll give a specific example. This is one of the ones I gave in the book. one of the Enneagram types is called the loyal skeptic, which is a six. Mm-hmm. Part of their worldview is the world is full of threats, danger, terrors. And so in that kind of world, I have to remain vigilant, skeptical, you know, of people and of space. I also have to I call it threat forecasting. I have to think about all the things that could potentially go wrong and have a plan for, okay, if I go around the corner and there's this horrible thing, then what am I going to do? So there's a lot of energy that's spent kind of like looking for danger and looking for threats. If somebody who leads with that type is also in the body of, let's say, a white woman, and she's already naturally, you know, her natural type structure is I'm looking for threats everywhere. We all do this in 9 different ways where like the thing you're looking for, you'll find, right? So to her, she might look at me or one of us as a threat because that's the natural inclination. And then plus the power she has as the white woman, right? Naming me or naming one of us as a threat can pose an actual risk to my own life and my own survival because she holds that power. And so part of the work is recognizing for people with who hold power in this society is I really have to do my work to create that space between what's the story I'm telling myself and what's reality. Is this actually a threat, or is this my type structure telling me that these people, this space, whatever, is something I can't survive? And so then the action I step into causes even greater harm to the whole and to the collective, right? But for me, I see my work as recognizing, like unlearning that story that being armored is bad or shameful in some sort of way. And then being able to practice presence in my body to know when is my armor needed and when can I set it down. I think that for, we talk about often how like Black women tend to be at the forefront of like liberation movements and things like that. And I think that when you are constantly fighting for something, you know, the world that you want to see, the world that you want to create, it's really hard to set down the fight. You know, you just stay in that constant state of I'm ready to go. And while that is necessary, if that's the only thing that we experience, then for example, we don't get to fully experience support when it's offered. Because I'm so armored, it never touches me. It's like you offer me support and it hits my armor and slides right off. And so part of learning how to create space so that I can set down the armor when I can is so that then my body, I'm visualizing armor as something that's, you know, a barrier between me and the external, right? And so if I can learn how to set that down in spaces that are safe enough, and especially with just me, you know, I think for a lot of us, we don't know how to be, we don't know how to create safety even within ourselves. So when there's nobody here and it's just me in my apartment, I'm still holding myself to the same standards as the world out there. I'm still berating myself for the same things. I'm still, you know, telling myself the same stories about not enoughness or whatever, right? So it's like the work is internal, the work is also collective, but as we learn to create space to put down the armor when it's not necessary, we get to experience more support. We get to experience more care. We get to experience more love and ease, which then helps us continue to move forward.
Yeah.
What you're saying about not really like vilifying having the armor, without knowledge of the Enneagram, I see it so much just in social media and the trends and like the soft girl era and the divine feminine. And I feel like when I see those sort of like archetypes being romanticized, it's very much through the lens of white womanhood and white femininity. And I'm wondering if you have any, it seems like it goes in these like cycles of like girl boss, and then it's like soft girl. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about kind of the cycles we see in social media regarding how we hold ourselves, how we hold our softness, how we hold the armor, and when that is vilified and when it's not.
Yeah, that's, I agree. The pendulum is like constantly swinging with those things. In social media, I feel like soft girl life has very, you know, it's a very capitalistic version of that, where it's mm-hmm. like vacations and, you know, you got to have money to have a soft girl era, right. is yeah. what it comes across like.
Yeah.
And when I think of softness in this context, especially for people, again, who have to be armored a lot of times, it's about remembering who I am outside of my armor. Like, it's about like not falling into the trap that this calcified version of self is the entirety of who I am. And mm-hmm. and how do I make space to tend to and to nurture that fuller version of myself, which could be things like play and rest and like connection and those sorts of things, mm-hmm. helps keep my heart and keep myself soft in a world that demands that I have to be hard in order to survive. Right? Yeah. That's where I see, but that's not the, to your point, that's not the white girl, white woman version of things. And it's also not, when I think of softness in this context, it's not, I'm not denying the, it's almost like the way I hear it on social media is you kind of have to block everything out and just like mm-hmm. focus on your peace. Mm-hmm. And that's just escapism, right? You still have to come back to the real world and to life as it is. So I think remembering myself and tending to those parts of me is not in denial of the dangers, the difficulties, the reason why I do need armor. But it's to say, mm-hmm. how can I hold both? How can I hold the reality of the world as it is and the ways I need to like survive that, but not lose sight of my soft self, not lose sight of my vulnerability, my creativity, my inherent like right to rest, to be loved, to be in community, like those sorts of things.
Is this a part of the work that you're doing with your podcast, From Armor to Ease?
Yeah, kind of. I, you know, it's like with my podcast, I want to explore not just the Enneagram, because I just feel mm-hmm. like, I don't know, that's a whole other thing. I'm not going to go down that.
Yeah. I mean, the world is bigger than the Enneagram.
It is. It's just one tool, you know, it's one tool and there are many tools. But I want to explore how those individual stories we have show up in different aspects of life. So in season one mm-hmm. of the podcast, we explored intimacy. And I wanted to, you know, with all my guests, I was exploring how this singular story you have of who you believe you must be to be okay impacts mm-hmm. your relationship with intimacy. If you believe that you're only loved if you are successful, how does that impact your relationships, your experience of intimacy, right? If you believe that you are only worthy if you're strong and powerful, how does that impact your relationships and intimacy? So we go around all the nine types and explore that, as well as some other, you know, non-type specific episodes. And I want to explore that with like nurture. I want to explore that with parenting. I want to explore that with politics and see the ways in which our stories of who we have to be can limit us in those ways, but also the invitation to expand beyond the individual story.
I definitely need to listen to that. I know we have to wrap up here, but we like to ask this question to close out. What keeps you going?
That's a great question. Especially in this time. Most days I'm like, how do people stay liking humans? Because I'm having a hard time.
same.
Having a very hard time. So I think making space, what keeps me going? Food, trying to go on a walk every day. mm-hmm. making space to laugh, whether it's at like memes or in like funny, you know, like group chats or whatever, making space for laughter every day. And then making space for grief every day. I cry yeah. every day and I laugh every day. And I think that's the only reason I'm still sort of sane.
Beautiful. Yeah. Well, Chichi, thanks so much for giving us some of your time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening again to another episode of the Hope and Heartpills podcast. As always, we appreciate you. And no matter where you are, what's happening in the world, what you're going through, I want you to remember, a new world is possible. It does not have to be this way, because we are tomorrow makers. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for choosing to listen today. You can catch up with our hosts online. Trish's is at Trish's Music, that's spelled T-R-I-S-H-E-S, Music on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Andre is at The Andre Henry on Instagram and TikTok, and at Andre Henry on Twitter. Catch the songs you heard today and more of their music on Spotify. If you'd like to support what we're doing here and see the video of Andre and Trish's conversation, you can join the Patreon at www.patreon.com/AndreHenry. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.